So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. Today I have with me Maurice Pentel, who is, let me get this right, well, he's a bit of a luminary in the CX customer experience and service sort of space, and also heads up an organization called the CXFO, which he will tell us more about. But hi Maurice, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Adrian. Thank you for inviting me on today.
You're very welcome. Now, so, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and a bit about the work that you do?
So, I started out in customer experience a very long time ago, looking at the relationship between the citizen and the state in the late 1970s for the newly minted Thatcher government acolytes who wanted someone to try and describe stuff. Which never really got off the drawing board, I have to say. And I, through my career, had a variety of roles in involving customer experience to the point where I was delivering one customer experience project and I thought, this really isn't good customer experience and what I want to do is I want to set up on my own. And so I started my own agency, effectively, and I started a thing called the Customer Experience Foundation, which is now just called CXFO.
Okay. And so what sort of work do you do with the organization? And also, I know it's cxfo.org.
Yep.
So, I guess two questions. One, what sort of work do you do? And the second one is .org. That sort of implies not commercial, charitable, not-for-profit status, almost like non-governmental in kind of many kind of ways. So can you explain the kind of rationale behind that?
So let me take the second part first, okay, if I may.
Yeah.
So it's a .org because I have a philosophy that says where there's good science, it should be shared. I believe, from a practical point of view, that we deliver bad customer experience more efficiently and at a lower cost than at any time in our history.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to cxfo.org, what you'll find is resources around the subjects that interest us, information around the subjects that interest us and we think are of use to people, that are not only free, but also that follow my rules of good interaction. So you don't need to register.
Right.
You don't end up on an email sharing list, and the science that we put up there is absolutely free and is absolutely easy for anyone to use. And there's a second aspect to the .org thing, which is I regularly try and engage with leading thinkers across a variety of subjects and disciplines in order to further a better understanding of customer experience. So that's the .org thing, and, and when I appear on at conferences and do speeches as the chairman of the foundation, I have one underlying rule, which is I will not sell anything.
Right.
What I'm there for is to further the science side of things. So then, as a consultant, I run customer experience services, and that's a business. And we advise really big companies and governments around the world on things to do with customer experience science. And I do a huge number of workshops and various kinds of interactions, ranging from how do you deal with certain cultural issues in particular countries, through to how do you do advanced customer journey mapping, through to how do you explain things to colleagues and to customers when things go wrong and when you need to create change?
Okay.
So they sort of appear to be linked together because there's me at the heart of it. Sorry.
Maurice didn't turn his phone off, so
he's
running
sorry.
Across the room to turn his phone off. And then we're going to pause. So Maurice has scurried across the room, turned his phone out. Fair enough. I challenged him to throw it into the sink and fill it up full of water, but he wouldn't do it. So anyway, he's back now.
I have switched it off. I rejected the experiment with the water.
So you were saying about some of the work you do, and it's wide and varied. I mean, I guess in many ways, it's I mean, I seem to, we're possibly in a similar sort of game in that I sometimes see us as a bit like the AA or the RAC. You know, sometimes you get called out, and some people have got flat tires, and some people just need a jump start, and some people kind of need to get towed away, and you know, for a bigger set piece of work. But I guess the thing that really interests me about what you were saying, and I guess it's maybe slightly different to maybe how I would approach it, but you talk about customer experience science, and I think that, and that's interesting because I don't hear very many other people kind of talk about customer experience science per se. And so can you explain to me what you mean about that, and is it all about science, or is there a place for art too?
Ah, a very interesting question. So I guess my starting point is what do I mean by science?
Mm-hmm.
Customer experience covers a huge number of areas, from the way you connect technologies together through to pieces around behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It covers the different properties of different channels and why we use them. A text interaction is something that's appropriate under certain circumstances, but under other circumstances, a face-to-face or a video interaction is the most appropriate thing to do. Sometimes it's self-service, and those are just one side of it. And then there are things like customer journey mapping, and we have this 21-layer approach to customer journey mapping based on appropriate contact, based on behavioral science, and I'll speak to that in a moment. So through to the design of the actual experience and the piece that you describe as magic, as art.
Magic.
And to some extent, there's an element of magic. And,
right.
And what I mean by an element of magic, again, I'll come back
sure.
to that piece. So in terms of science, there are the technology sciences, and I think we're very good at those, but I think we often allow the technology sciences to guide our overall thinking. There are the strategy and tactical sciences, and I think in terms of those, we're pretty poor. And then there are the behavioral sciences, where robust work has been done on behavior for the last 50 years, in accredited institutions around the world that business ignores.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in terms of the sciences, trying to get over the idea that there should be some discipline to that is something that I'm very strongly focused on, and is why we're looking to run more educational programs that actually focus on behavior, technology, people, and experience,
sure.
and actually flesh that piece out.
Yeah, yeah.
But then in terms of is experience art, and is there such a thing as experience magic? I'm afraid on that front, I am a bit of a romantic and a bit of an optimist.
Why are you afraid of that?
Is that
decidedly British kind of expression? Oh, I must apologise.
I'm awfully sorry, Adrian, but I am romantic, and I am. I think when you give someone a wonderful experience, and I'm not talking in commercial terms, but I think when you do something good for someone, there's something magical about that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whether it's this interview is being recorded around about Christmas time, and whether or not it's a magical moment for someone at Christmas or a situation where you help someone through hopelessness or a particular challenge, the idea that you might inspire someone, mm-hmm. or give them confidence or give them some kind of change, is both scientifically important, because you're changing the chemical balance of their bodies with all kinds of different elements,
mm-hmm.
through to the design of experience, but it's also pretty magical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I travel around the world speaking, sometimes people say to me, "Wow, you've inspired me to go back and think in a different way." And to me, that's magic.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm both hard discipline and a little bit romantic. I think there's room for all of this in customer experience.
I think what's interesting is that, because you talked about sort of the technology and then the vision strategy piece and then the behavioral side. So it's almost like the technology of technological sciences, and that's the science of like ones and zeros.
Absolutely.
And electrical currents and things. And then you have the behavioral sciences, and that's the technology, that's organic technology.
Yes.
In many ways. And then there's this bit in the middle, which is about sort of ideas and about the right way to go and about directions and everything. So like the cloud that sits in between the two of them. And maybe that's the art.
I think that is the art, but I also think that's the space where we're most lazy. I think that's the area where we think, oh, it's too complicated. And I think that what we don't do...
Why is it too complicated? Is it because it's like there's not enough... Do we fear that it's too complicated because there's not enough that we believe is certain, and therefore it's about taking a risk? And therefore, because it's less scientific, so I'm doing the inverted kind of quotes with my fingers there. So it feels less certain, therefore it's about plotting a path, and it's not kind of based on sort of necessarily about evidence, because it's about projecting into the future, and therefore it is almost about uncertainty and risk, and so by definition.
I think that's there's an element of that. I think there are a couple of pieces to that. So firstly, our immediate history in terms of commercial organisations and the way in which the world has worked, mm-hmm, has been about predefined processes with very clear activities in order to refine them. And there I'm talking about things like Six Sigma and all the way back to Prince, and you know, I'm old enough to remember the ones before that. And I think that...
Well, BS5750 and...
Absolutely.
Do you want to go?
Now you've impressed me with your memory. So I think that there is a piece around that, and I think that our love of technology in the technology era means that, you know, predictable outcomes are a huge thing. But I also think there is a piece around the description of human emotion, the description of behavioral outcomes,
okay,
where we've struggled. Our standard is how angry is angry. And if you can't describe how angry someone is to a colleague, then how do you know what you're doing about it?
But surely the kind of point, there's a bigger point, which says they're just angry. And some people tend to be more angry than others because that's just kind of how they are. And if somebody's angry, then the level is kind of irrelevant. Actually, you should just do something about it or not.
And in that, you've walked straight into the trap. It's having that debate and being able to have that debate in an organization that is the piece that I think we do so badly.
Right. Okay.
And it's that piece that says, ooh, all this emotion stuff, all of this behavior stuff's too complicated.
But I have a problem with the conditionality one of the tracks that we're going down is almost applying a conditionality to levels of emotional response. But that in of itself is dependent on the person.
I agree with you. And we do have a serious problem in terms of that. We've developed our own standard on this as a subject, and the way in which I position that standard is by no means being robust, but being a framework for your organisation to look, right, look at the way in which it works.
If it's a way of helping us think through rather than providing kind of like definitive answers, then sure, I think that's kind of helpful.
And that's, you know, my raison d'etre with that piece. Drucker said, you know, you can't fix what you don't measure, and I think, you know, you can't measure what you don't describe.
Mm.
So if you start to build a common language, if we all agree that A equals something,
mm-hmm,
then you've got a way of describing it. And to go back to your point, if someone is angry, we ought to do something about it. I don't believe that that discussion goes ahead, and I also don't believe that in most organisations they have a term that recognises that someone is angry.
Right.
And that's the point. So I don't think my framework is better than any other framework, but the reason that we publish it is so people can have the discussion.
Right.
And can say what's appropriate for us in our circumstance.
Okay. And so I know that there's also this other sort of element where, you know, we were talking offline before we started kind of here, and this is something that, you know, you talk about wanting to develop that conversation, and you've got some plans around that, and got this thing, you know, you've got a nickname for it, it's called BAT or something. I mean, tell us about BAT, because you were very excited about that before we started.
I am.
So what's BAT all about, Maurice?
So, on the 8th of March next year, we're lucky enough to be taking over a chunk of the Science Museum and turning the whole of the Science Museum into a behavioural experiment and a game for a couple of hundred delegates under the heading Behaviour as Technology.
Okay.
And the theme is the theme we've been talking about today, Adrian. It's this idea that we think this stuff is too complicated, we think it's too difficult. And let me give you one classic example. Mm-hmm. And that's, there's been a huge amount of behavioral science in the States around the fact that if we pay people incentives to do higher level thinking, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And that stuff has been done and repeated and demonstrated in, I don't remember how many countries around the world, but mm-hmm. it's a classic set of experiments. And yet, it's the basis for all of our business incentives. So business science has been saying for the last 30 years, this doesn't work. And businesses have been refining their approach to this to make it more and more intricate and less effective, therefore. Mm-hmm. And so behavior as technology is something that I came up with the idea of with my colleagues, that what we're going to do is we're going to have a unique conference where it's not death by PowerPoint, and where we're going to create behavioral experiments for people to actually see. Mm-hmm. And we're inviting behavioralists from around the world to do some stuff there, and the idea of that event at that location.
Well, at the Science Museum is a pretty impressive kind of place, and I mean that in itself is. I can't remember the last time I was at the Science Museum, so that'd be exciting.
Well, I was there last Thursday, and what I can tell you is behaviour is not one of the sciences that they do anything about. So I feel like I'm flying the flag in that, as a subject.
I think I think what's kind of fascinating is it's about getting people to start, as you say, start thinking about it and start talking about it. You talk about this idea of the thing that came to mind when you were talking about incentives around innovation and creativity and all that sort of stuff, and how you've seen these things don't work. And it just reminds me, given that we're at the time of the year it's a bit like gift buying.
Yep.
And it's very easy to throw money at gift buying. You end up buying a whole bunch of stuff. There's no guarantee actually that there's going to be a good gift.
Yeah.
Because actually a good gift, I would suggest, and one that a gift that that gets used and gets remembered and with fondness, is something that takes time and effort. I mean, not a lot of time, but at least a big lump of thoughtfulness.
Yes.
That goes into it. So it's almost like the emotional labour that is required to produce something which goes, that's meaningful. Now that could come in an inspirational kind of moment, or it could come from trawling around a flea market going to find that one thing. And that flea market could be in the face, in a face-to-face, in a physical situation, or you find something on eBay, or what's the word? What's the other one? The kind of arts and crafts one. Oh, I can't remember. Etsy or whatever.
Right.
You know, yeah. You spend hours searching around for the thing.
Yes.
And I guess that's the kind of the point is I think it's just of an analogous situation.
Absolutely. So my world of work is about frameworks.
Right.
And to use the example you've given there, so what I can tell you is, you're right, there is a thing, whatever that thing is, it may require inspiration, it may be built around knowledge, but there is whatever that thing is that is the perfect gift, or there's no such thing as a perfect gift, but a great gift, and then there is the journey or process to get there, and that may be, as you say, the journey of an instant, or it may be the journey of 3 months of looking. But whatever that is, the circumstance, the nature of the relationship, the complexity of the situation, all of which play into that framework. And then there is the giving of the gift, the way in which it's done, the context, the level of surprise. And all of these things fall within a framework.
But surely there's a precondition to that as well, which is the permission that you grant yourself and or others, and the provision of space to find that gift, or kind of decide what that is, go searching for that gift, whether that space, that time and space is an instantaneous, because it's just like ta-da, moment of inspiration, or
yeah,
you say it's a 3 month thing. Because if you look at it, if you go back to the performance systems of our innovation and creativity and these things that people throw kind of money and rewards at people, but that doesn't kind of work because surely there's no space created and no permission created to do that.
Absolutely. There's a real challenge with that. What we like to do is we like to be able to sit in the boardroom and to say, we've done this and we've spent that, and that is not as comfortable as saying we've created the opportunity for people to move things forward, for people to make change. The best example I can give you of that is, I did a program last year or the year before in an organization that's in 70 odd countries. And what I created was a framework so that the outcome that was required would be coloured by the cultural mores of each country, rather than any centrally derived set of rules.
Sure.
And so creating that permission moment within, you know, within each of those very different cultures, and I'm talking about, in some cases, a culture, my favourite one is a culture where men do not like to say I'm sorry to women.
Yeah.
And therefore their approach to their approach was completely different to a culture based around gambling and chance and the relationship with 5,000 gods.
Yeah.
In another part of the world. But creating the frameworks for these things,
yeah,
is the absolute key, because every experience, every what it means to us is unique to the individual. And also, there is one final point I'd like to make about this. Experience ends in memory. So when I deliver the experience, that's a point of ecstasy, for want of a better term. It's a heightened moment. It's how you feel about it over the medium or long term. And the best example I can give you of that is, if women remembered the pain of childbirth, there'd be no second children. You know, we know empirically, and this is why I talk about behavior as a science, there is a clear observational fact that says memory shifts over time. And I could give you 100 other examples of that across a wide spectrum of things. Well, we know that stuff changes. So why do we ask the "would you recommend us" question 30 seconds after we've had an experience, and then think that gave you true insight into how we feel?
Sure.
It makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
Drives me mad.
Right, so anyway, we'll look out for, I will make sure that we kind of get all that sort of the back sort of stuff as it is kind of in early days sort of linked up, so it's You heard it here first, folks.
You literally did. We only agreed it a few days ago, and you're the first audience to hear about it.
Perfect. So, but bringing us back to sort of current sort of stuff, I mean, what do you think? I mean, what's your view on some of the biggest and most current sort of challenges facing kind of most organizations right now, when we talk about how to design and deliver a great service or great experience for their kind of customers? I mean, if you're, I mean, you see lots of different organizations and you can hear lots of different things and you're thinking about lots of different things. I mean, sometimes it's like, it's not just about the far kind of future or even the medium term future. Sometimes it's a case of like, I need to put the spanner kind of in kind of right now. I mean, what are the things that you just go, I wish they'd fix that. I wish they'd do more of that. I wish they'd be better at that.
So I think there are a few pieces that are the burning platforms in everyone's world at the moment. So the first one is back to what we've been talking about. I think the piece around behavior, I think even though I designed technology in the 1970s and 1980s and you know, all the way up to 2010, I think that behavior is a massive opportunity to have an impact on the bottom line, and how engaged your customers are with you, and that piece is a huge part of that. The second piece that sits with that, that's like behavior or is part of behavior, I should say, is culture. Right. And I think in organizations right now, we still have a siloed set of cultures. And I think the breaking down of those silos and the breaking down of organizational structures, and I don't mean getting rid of organization by any means. What I mean is customer experience is a service. Mm-hmm. In the same way that legal is a service, in the same way that IT is a service, experience design is a service to an organization, not something owned by the individual parts of the silo.
Yeah.
CX shouldn't be sitting in marketing. It shouldn't be sitting in operations. It should be part of every single part of the organization, because customer experience is a team sport.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there is another two big challenges. So the first is technology is all merging together. I no longer have a single experience on a single platform. I'm able to do email on my phone. I'm able to do email on my tablet. I'm able to bring together everything from my television watching through to my work stuff on any device. And we call that platform independent experience, because I love a good buzzword. But this idea around my pie and the fact that all of this stuff is coming together has empowered customers in a way that never existed in the past. Mm-hmm. They are better informed, they're more adaptable, they've got better technology than the organization can cope with.
Yeah.
So I think that's a bit of a challenge when I'm...
Do you think within that there is a... people talk about... you're talking about platform independent experience, and then from an organizational standpoint, we had multi-channel, we had omni-channel, and I think we're now into kind of opti-channel, blah, blah, blah. I don't know where we're at now. But I guess my point is that if we accept the fact that customers are enabled, making kind of choices, doing their own things, so in front of many firms, and many firms are trying to catch up.
Yeah.
Now, is there not an argument that says actually trying to catch up is a hostage to fortune? And actually, what many companies would be better placed doing is to go, it's not a multi-channel or an opti-channel or an omni-channel thing, it's this. And they make and they take a stand and they go, you know what, your customers are over there, and if we keep chasing them, we're going to lose, and therefore we have to make a stand and go, this is what we are, this is how we do it. And you set your stall out and you get great at doing a limited amount rather than trying to get average at doing everything.
I think there is a...
as a contrary sort of...
I think they're not they're not contrary. I think there are two pieces. So the first one is, I think trying to chase your customers onto every single platform is ludicrous and a silly idea. I know a lot of organizations are doing it, but I also think under that heading, that experimenting with the channels that customers are using and learning how to build different ways into your customer relationships is a really important thing. But I think that piece is to some extent taken care of itself, because my ability to integrate WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, and a whole host of other things is becoming easier and easier. Mm-hmm. So that's by no means the total side of it. But doing stuff well and providing your customers with an experience that they want, I think that's customer experience 101. And I think doing 20 different channels badly is where most organizations think that they want to get to. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an erroneous and foolish.
I mean, because don't you think it's fascinating? I mean, we talk about, we laud, or many people laud Amazon for its service and experience. And yet, if you have a question for them, it's pretty much by email. Yeah, you can find their phone number if you try really hard, and they will pick up the phone. But they go, it's this, and that's it.
And I struggle with that as an approach.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to say that's kind of an interesting kind of thing, because actually, if you look at kind of some of the sort of the leaders,
yeah,
that are out there in this space, you know, these kind of pans of, you know, the names that always kind of come about, I look at them and just go, they are generally a very simple approach.
They do, but I find that most of those leaders fail in other areas. So people talk about Apple.
Uh-huh.
All right, try and organise an appointment with Apple, and you're heading down the road to, you know, it's a fool's errand. Trying to get hold of Amazon, you're right, it's a Don Quixote moment. The number is out there, but you know, you actually actively have to go and find it.
But they're pretty good on email, though.
They're pretty good on email.
In fact, they're actually pretty excellent on email, generally.
I agree. I also think that there are some organisations who pioneer a really good approach to web chat.
Mm-hmm.
But this goes back to my view of the science piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I have a problem, what I most want to do is to communicate instantly with someone who is free of process, in a free form fashion, because I don't understand your process, I want to express my problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that because I understand the science of that, and the science of that doesn't go away. So what I would say is that although I think that Amazon, in terms of the sales process, the display process of the products, and all of those pieces, does an absolutely amazing job, which is why they're so successful. When it comes to some of the other pieces, their approach, from my point of view as an expert in the field, though I don't really think I am, I think I'm still a novice, is that's not as good as it might be.
Right.
And that I would score that lower. Now, I'll give you one example, my pet peeve. So I'm with EE as a supplier, and I try and do something on the website, and then when that goes wrong, I end up having to phone EE, and the first thing that happens is they tell me, "Welcome to EE, Britain's fastest telephone network, or 4G network, or whatever it is. This is not the moment to be smug with me." And I think that it's that basic stuff that,
right,
that these leaders who you're talking about, who are really excellent in one thing and then don't do enough or well enough with at the other stuff. When I have a problem, I want a human as soon as is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer it takes to get me to that human,
yeah,
the bigger the problem is in my mind, the bigger the emotional cadence of that problem is, the more difficult I am to deal with. And that, to me, is customer experience science 101.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's why I'm always banging on about the science piece, because I think there are people who do some things really, really well, and they lead the market.
Sure.
But I hate the way that these same few organizations are endlessly trotted out as the perfect example of experience, when no one's perfect and all of us are learning, and all of us are learning all the time.
Yeah. So I have a view where I think it's I'm an admirer of simplicity. I mean real simplicity. And because I think it takes bravery, it takes courage. I think as human beings we're generally not very good at eliminating things, making choices around sort of saying yes to that, no to that, etc., etc., which plays into your behavioural piece. And therefore, rightly or wrongly, I'm a fan of people that have gone, pare things down, going, this is what it is. And always trot out, this is the value proposition. This is our service, our experience kind of value proposition.
Yeah.
This is our stall. Here we are. We're not trying to please all the people all of the time. We're just doing our thing, and we're going to do it so well, it's going to stand out. So I admire that as an approach.
As do I.
And I think, yes, there's some people that fit into that kind of mold, and some people that aspire to that. And I think it's when you have so many companies that are talking about, oh, everybody wants to be a leader, you go, like, mathematically that's not possible. But actually, leading can be relative. And I think that's kind of the interesting thing, is that there's still too many companies that are trying to please all of the people all the time. And actually, if they took a stand for something and actually figured out what they could do and got really good in a segment of the market, actually, it might be a better way to address the larger part of the market, because you end up getting really great and then it attracts people that way. But actually, that's just that's just one of these things I think about.
Well, I'm very much the same. So firstly, I worked for a really large telco a lifetime or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did was we took about 5,500 projects and we turned them into 35 priorities. And I've worked with an insurance company, mm-hmm. and simplified all of their terms and conditions so normal humans can understand them, reducing their inbound phone calls by a massive amount.
Mm-hmm.
I believe simplicity is the absolute key, which is why we publish the stuff that we do,
yeah.
to provide a way of simplifying down. Because I think if you do one thing well, then you can maybe add something to that and add another thing later.
Mm-hmm.
But most organizations, as you say, are spreading the butter far too thin.
What is it? What's the old saying that says? It's like, four lame racehorses lashed together doesn't make a champion.
No, absolutely. And that's what that's where I see most organizations, their thinking is, everyone else is in this, and therefore we need to be there.
Hmm.
But delivering 20 things badly rather than one thing well.
Right. So we've mused on that for a while. So I'm just keeping an eye on time, Morrison. I just thought I want to turn the tables a little bit and ask you, because I wrote a book earlier this year called How to Wow.
It's a very good book, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you read it.
Thank you very much. You're very kind. So one of the things I've been doing on the back of all these interviews, so I'm turning the tables towards the end to get people's, it's like my ongoing piece of research, market research, is to say, well, I talk about wow service and experience, but what I'm interested in doing is getting your take on what does wow service or experience mean to you, and what do you think companies should be doing more of to deliver that?
So I think, first of all, I think the stuff on wow experience in the book is really interesting, and you have me absolutely buzzing and thinking about it, and I'm not sure that I know as much as I thought I did before I started reading it, which is, that's a great experience in itself.
Thank you.
I think there are some pieces there. The first is, when we talk about wow experience, I think sometimes we're blinded in the headlights. The reality is, in most customer relationships, there are more opportunities to be unhappy than happy. Mm-hmm. When things work well, we don't notice them. You know, the parcel delivered on time is not news to us. It's the parcel that's delivered outside our expectation that gives us a problem, and that's the one that we're going to comment on.
Sure.
People do not tweet, the ATM was working for the 100th time in 100 days, because we expect things to work. So there's a piece around actually the wow experience to some extent in a relationship could be argued to be just getting stuff right. But I know that's not where this conversation's going.
Well, it can be, because I actually am a great believer in that. It's like, shut up about, and it's a bit like going, shut up and forget about all the shiny baubles and the chocolates on pillows and everything else, and just be brilliant at the basics.
I absolutely agree with that, and I think if you want to deliver a wow experience, then dealing with the basics is a really important thing. The second thing is, actually, before I go on to the second thing, what I'd like to do is to give you a little bit of an example from the hotel trade. Mm-hmm. So I've done work on the future of the hotel experience for a big hotel chain. And I go to all these hotels, and they spend a huge amount on the buildings, a huge amount on the training of the staff, the uniforms, the restaurants, and all the other stuff. And then they serve me the cheapest coffee on the planet, and they a really poor breakfast. And I think, you know, that what they're doing is they're devaluing their interest and their expenditure and all the other stuff. So it's not just about it's not just about getting things right. It's also about being consistent in your approach. Mm-hmm. And when I say consistent, I mean consistent with your brand value.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's one side of it. And then in terms of what delivers a real wow, well, you need an expectation model.
Mm-hmm.
So a wow is a wow is fundamentally, and again, I'm only talking about the basic science of it, as a something that's either a surprise or outside of initial expectation that is relevant to somebody. So if we go back to what you were talking about before in terms of the Christmas gift, a wow is a gift or a moment of generosity or an act of kindness or even a human connection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to deliver wow moments, then what I could say at the most basic is empower your front line.
Mm-hmm.
Because too few organizations have empowered front lines, and providing someone with an emotionally engaging experience might be the only wow you need to deliver. But of course, one could see that as being the cheapest wow you could deliver. So
can I add a kind of addendum to that? Can we move average handling time up from the target column into the measure column?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that then the second thing is, if you want to wow your customers, stop designing experiences around process,
mm-hmm.
and start designing processes around experience, because most are historically built,
mm-hmm.
where what we're really doing is covering the cracks of that process. So that's another thing. And then the final thing in terms of how you deliver wow moments is you look at lifetime value and you look at the impact on your reputation. So the thing about lifetime value is it's not a short-term metric, but it does give you the opportunity to play financially with what a wow might cost you,
yeah.
and what that impacts on the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final piece on this is, we know that the majority of people traveling will go to TripAdvisor or one of these other sites and see what people say. So customer service is now your number one means of converting prospects into actual customers. in terms of the marketing process. So giving people that wow is not only important in terms of how your relationship works with them, but also as a means to develop brand, mm-hmm. to do marketing and all of those things. So when you put those together with the other financials around this, and when you think about it in terms of the mechanics, and it is just about giving them some unexpected gift, mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if it's the peppermints in the box that comes with the odd Amazon thing, or if it's a... There's a wonderful story about a hotel chain, and I forget which one off the top of my head, but for a disabled customer who was staying in a hotel for an anniversary, they actually built a ramp onto the beach so him and his other half could have dinner on the beach, and that involved a huge amount of work. It wasn't something that they asked for, but the hotel chain, and I think it's the Ritz-Carlton, now I think about it, just went ahead and did this thing. It was an unexpected surprise. And the other wonderful thing about this is that's not written in a manual anywhere. No. That's about encouraging your people to do it.
Perfect.
So my final point would be, your frontline staff will know how to create a wow moment. Get out of their way and let them do it.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. That's brilliant, and I couldn't agree more. So that brings me to my last question that I always ask at the end of these interviews, and that is this. Is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug, Morris?
I think there's two things, Adrian, I'd like to shamelessly plug. The first is, being British, I'll apologise to that in advance. The first thing is, go visit cxfo.org. You'll see an emotional model piece, you'll mm-hmm. see a customer experience maturity set of drawings. As I said earlier, you don't have to sign up to anything. You don't have to become our friends. There are all kinds of video resources, all kinds of other things that you can use in order to move things forward. So that's the first thing.
Okay.
And then the second thing is you'll also find a space there to register interest to get more information about Behaviour as a Technology Conference. Do go have a look at that. You may find it interesting. But beyond that, you know, helping yourselves, nothing really.
Perfect. Well, I'll make sure I get all that linked up, and when I do the write-up and things, we'll give you the CXFO.org a big shout-out, and also the Behaviour as Technology sort of conference. And I guess I'll see you there, if not before. Morris, thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you, everybody. Thanks for your time today.